Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
Absolutely.
If we're uncomfortable
Absolutely.
Talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Hello, everyone. This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media. I am one of your hosts, Jillian Hainsworth, and we're joined by...
Akua Menzaidu.
We had a dynamic show for you today. Today we are joined by Miss Denise Barr, or as we like to call her around the hood, Mama Barr, Mama Denise. And we also have Saria Walker and Freebirth Omoigwe. So I'll give you a little bit of background. Denise Barr is an organizer and community liaison for the Fruit Belt neighborhood in Buffalo. She's an advocate for public education, transportation, food equity, and land appropriation. She supported the Fruit Belt community in becoming the first residential parking permit system in the city of Buffalo. And she is a legend and a staple
Absolutely.
In the grassroots movement in Buffalo. If there's something going on, Ms. Barr, she's showing up. Saria and Freebirth are both youth community health workers with CONNECT, which is Community Network for Engagement, Connection, and Transformation, where they work on a variety of issues impacting the well-being of young people in Buffalo. Saria is a first-year student at Erie Community College, and Freebirth is a high school senior at Buffalo Academy for the Visual and Performing Arts. Shout out to PA. Saria and Freebirth were both freshmen during the time of May 14th in 2022. Happy to have you all here with us today.
Thank you. I always appreciate when I get an invitation to say anything, because I'm like, if you really need me to say something, okay, I can do that. But, you know, I'm grateful because people don't have to invite you.
You know, every time I have heard you speak, I don't even know if you realize how you just like kind of drop gems mm-hmm. and you just give, you don't just talk to people, you meet them where they are and you help them understand the way these systems impact them. And that's really important for why we're here today, because we're talking about May 14th. We are at the 3-year anniversary of May 14th.
Yeah.
And I think there's a really important conversation, mm-hmm. intergenerational conversation that needs to happen when we're talking about why Buffalo is the way it
right.
is and how we envision it for the future. So let's just start right there.
Okay. I appreciate that. I mean, this is not, I always, in order for me to stay centered, I have to consistently be thoughtful that this is not a me.
Mm-hmm.
This is a we.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the people that get caught up in their heads about it's a me, and then they get off center, and then they go somewhere where they have no business being. I try to stay in my lane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As an organizer who's working on a lot of issues that are really prevalent and ripe here in Buffalo, like transportation, like food,
right.
food equity. We know that a lot of our communities are dealing with food apartheid and
yeah.
they're not food deserts. Like
exactly.
they're not deserts. Desert is a natural occurrence and apartheid is intentional.
Mm-hmm.
So as someone who has been working on these issues for so long, why do you think we're still in a place where food is still an issue for us, even though it's been an issue for years, as long as I can remember?
Right. Well, I mean, it's systemic. We know that. It is not an issue that stands by itself. Everything feeds into everything else. And so I've always said, you know, if you can keep a community that is low income sealed off, and become an island unto itself, then, you know, you've given the restrictions and you've really cut them off, and slowly you're going to kill them out because they don't have access. It's intentional. If I don't want your community to flourish, why would I provide ways for you to be able to get outside of your community and on public transportation? Why would I encourage anybody to come and invest in your community and open up stores where you get appropriate food, never mind culturally relevant? Mm-hmm. Why would I have someone talk about, you know, maybe there's a need for other kinds of clothing, not just the bar clothes. And, you know, I appreciate young folks, right? But I'm 67. I'm not going to wear what you wear. Why can't I get what I need in my own community? I got to travel to other parts of the city. But it's all feeding into everything else. They're all interconnected. And so the more I restrain and I restrict you, the less that you're able to flourish and prosper. And that's the plan. It's always been the plan.
Saria and Freebirth, do you feel like your needs are met, your basic needs are met here in Buffalo, like in your community?
It depends on what we're talking about specifically. Food-wise, like going off what Ms. Barr said, I really do think it depends on where you are in the community. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you actually go through Buffalo and you go through different parts of the community, you'll see different stores. You'll see how, if you go to the east side, you'll start seeing, I would say, like, you know, just more fast food restaurants and just like not the places that you would see if you, you know, went down to the west side and mm-hmm. to Elmwood Village and things like that. It's obviously very segregated, and everybody's not eating the same. Everybody's not getting the same, like she said, the same clothes, the same everything. Like it's very segregated. It's very different. And different parts of the city are prioritized in different ways. And I think that's a major aspect. If you really paid attention, you would just see the huge differences. We're all in the same city, but there's just so many differences from the different parts of Buffalo.
I would say for me that I am only because, like, I have the means to do so, or like my mom has the means to do so. Mm-hmm. You know, for other people, they probably can't just get up and drive to, you know, a whole another side of town just to get food or just to get clothes or things that you need, which is why it's so important to have those places in your own community, because, you know, like most people are using public transportation or even walking or getting themselves somewhere without a car. So it's like, if it's not in your community, then you're most likely gonna go to what's in your community. You're gonna go to what's closest to you. And like, I don't live on the west side, and I live on the east side, right?
Yeah,
and there's so many fast food places, like so many fast food. But there's like three different McDonald's like 5 minutes away mm-hmm. from my house. And if I'm being real, like that's where, like if I want food real quick, that's where I'm gonna go because it's so close. I don't want to drive 15 minutes out just to go get like a healthy meal, you know what I mean? And if I have, like if my mom has a car and my brother does, and you know, like they don't even want to do that sometimes, then I can't imagine how it is for other people who don't have the means to do so. Like, they're not getting what they need at all.
Mm-hmm. And I think the stat is a third of people living on Buffalo's east side have access to a vehicle, right? And so there's
minimum,
right?
Yes.
So there's stark differences in terms of how people get around and how they access you know, food in that nature.
And I would lovingly disagree. We don't all live in the same Buffalo.
Absolutely. Right.
The reality is that when COVID hit in my neighborhood, and I'm sure in others that are low income, our shelves got stripped.
Mm-hmm.
They talked about you need to wipe down your packages, sanitize. We had nothing. Mm-hmm. They started out with disinfectant products, took out our paper goods, and worked from there. Mm-hmm. But I bet you I could go and get on a bus and go over to Hurdle and go into a big store that's over there, which I did many times, and I got to go buy product, and I got to bring it back, and I got to divvy it up and hand it out in my community. Mm-hmm. So lovingly, I say no. Mm-hmm. We don't all live in the same Buffalo.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like that's evident even when you're just driving, you cross Main Street. East of Main Street, it is a different feeling. I remember around May 14th in Elmwood, there was Porch Fest, and people were walking around, they were drinking, they were smiling, there was music. And then you cross Main Street and people were on their hands and knees, like weeping. It was just so different. But to your point around COVID, even bus schedules changed. So like, if even if you are on a bus line and you don't have transportation and that's how you depend on getting to the store, your bus is coming way less often than it did pre-COVID, rather.
Absolutely. And I think also the infrastructure looks different too. Even on the same street, on the west side, and then you cross over to the east side, that infrastructure is completely different for the bus stations. You know, no shelters for many of them. And so there's a lot of conversations around how you start to shift what that looks like in the community. And so I think to your point, Ms. Barr, there is a stark difference. You know, I wanted to ask, you know, We're talking about May 14th, and this is the third year, right? The third anniversary of that tragic event that happened in our community. And so we've started to talk about some of those disparities and the systemic inequities. I'm wondering how that day shifted your understanding of community justice or responsibility. And I invite, you know, all of you to answer that.
Well, I mean, Miss Jillian was out there with me yesterday, and she knows it is extremely painful still. You know, I appreciate the people that do the arrangements to try to give the tribute and give the memorial. But the fact is that if you ignore our culture and our traditions, nobody's pouring libations. We have no elder that comes to speak to us to give us a word of encouragement. You know, we have representation from Tops. We have local politicians, and I don't fault any of them. I mean, you don't know what you don't know. But the reality is that it's not healing for many of us when we go. I go because my people are there and that's my community. But it's very painful still. And so I think that there has to be a really real change. Well, maybe not, right? Again, it's systemic. And so maybe that is the intention, that we're just going to give you these little things and, you know, you have to be grateful for whatever we give you, rather than to really diving into what would be healing for the people that are in those communities right there.
To start off, like, it opened my eyes that no city is 100% safe. When I would years prior just be online and would see another like racially motivated shooting happen, I would be like, that's terrible, but I never would have thought it would happen in, you know, my own city. Like, it really opened my eyes in a lot of ways, but specifically, like, there's just so much hate, and like, who would have thought that somewhere I'm around all the time, you know, somewhere that I was literally there a day prior would be targeted by someone that, you know, had so much hate for a certain race. But I was just honestly, again, very shocked. And I sat and I didn't even, you know, think that it was Tops at first. I was like, oh, it was probably just like the street across or something like that. But no, it was definitely Tops. And all of a sudden, I just started seeing a bunch of stuff, a bunch of messages pouring in, a bunch of things happening online, because Freebirth, you know, lives right up the street from Tops. So I texted her immediately, making sure that she was okay. I knew somebody that worked there. So even like people that I knew, we're being affected by this. So it changed my eyes that, you know, anybody can really be affected by this. Like, to be honest, like, you're really not 100% safe. Like, we just were talking about how everything is so segregated and separate. But, you know, if you have friends, you know, in different parts of the city, you're still going to be affected at the end of the day. So it's not even just about you. It's about your loved ones. It's about, you know, who you talk to, who you associate with. And they're not always going to live in the same place that, you know, that you live in.
For me, it was very, it felt very personal, because like, that is a place that I am always at. That's somewhere that my family is always at. It's a grocery store that's right up the street from my house. We were always there. Like she said, we were there like around the area a day prior. And just knowing so many people who like work there, like I knew at least three people who worked there. And just like I was just so scared because even though they may like not be your family or whatever, just like just you feel for people in general, like as a human being, you feel for people, whether you're their acquaintance, whether you know them personally or not. Like it was really just a lot. And like a bunch of people were just texting me, like making sure I was okay. And honestly, after that, like my mom was very scared to even let me out of the house. And which was very valid to me. I know a bunch of people, because performing arts is like, it's like not
three blocks away.
Yeah, it's right around there. Mm-hmm. A bunch of people didn't want to go to school from our school, from health science. Mm-hmm. A bunch of people were not trying to go to school. And honestly, I don't know, just the fact that they weren't really like, because I believe we did have school the next, the fact that they weren't really receptive to what the community was saying, that hurt a lot too, just because you have these two schools who are so, like, in such close proximity to where, you know, where it happened, and the people who go there are telling you, like, hey, like, maybe we should just take this day. Maybe we should just, you know, like, take this day to debrief and, like, just get ourselves together to see what, you know, what happens next. Because the fact that we were going to school, like, days after an event like that just happened is insane. Any parent would be like, you know what? No, maybe not today. Mm-hmm. And just the fact that, like, you know, the schools weren't receptive to what we were saying, that hurt, because it's like we're part of the community. And if we're being real here, the teachers and stuff that are in our schools, they're not part of the community. They don't live around, they don't live anywhere around there. They don't even live in Buffalo sometimes. Like, they're not in the area, so they're not as affected. So yeah, your teachers could come in and be perfectly fine, but your kids, your students, they are not, because they are part of the community. You can't go to school in Buffalo if you're not, like, if you don't even live in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. Like, so it's just the fact that teachers came in and were just so, like, it felt like they were just so unaffected. Like, it really showed that disconnect, because mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, you guys definitely are not with us. Mm-hmm. 100% are not.
Were there any spaces, like, intentionally created to help you talk about what happened? Like, what did they do after May 14th to kind of address the fact that this actually happened right here in this community?
We did have, like, talks with teachers, you know. I think it was very, it was, like, very situational. Like, it depended on the teacher, depending mm-hmm. on the class that you were in, you know. Some did, you know, did a little acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. Some took a whole class day just to talk about mm-hmm. it and ask us how we're doing. I'm pretty sure, like, guidance counselors came in to one of our classes to, like, you know, ask how we were doing and check up and stuff. But it really, it all mattered, like, what the teacher was down for that day, to be honest. Like, if the teacher wanted to talk about it, then that's what we would be doing. But if the teacher didn't really feel like that and wanted to go on with their lesson plan, that's what we would do. So it wasn't like a mandatory, you guys have to talk about this. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just whatever the teachers wanted to do, basically, which I feel like that shouldn't have been that way either. If you guys were going to have us come to school, at least, you know, have us acknowledge what was going on, have us talk, and, you know, put people in the school so that we can, like, process our feelings and our emotion, because that's what everybody was thinking about that day, that week, that month. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was honestly just very insensitive to me.
And Ms. Barr, I know, you know, we go back in terms yes. of your advocacy days and the Fruit Belt specifically. And I'm wondering, you know, what's going through your mind as you hear Saria and Freebirth talk about their experiences?
A lot of the things that I think about is, you know, for those of us that were out there, I have a few advocates that I work very close mm-hmm. closely with as well, from inner city and other communities. And I always pinpoint that, because, you know, I can only talk about my community. I can't talk about yours, right? I hate that community has become a buzzword.
Mm-hmm.
It's feel good, like, and you never know what people are talking about, like, when you say community, you know. In any case, it's hard because the seniors experience obviously things in a very different way, but it's been long-term trauma. Hmm. You know, as I'd mentioned to the young ladies earlier, I mean, for people like me that were born, I was born in 58. Mm-hmm. And so when I started school, I was in that first class after desegregation. Mm. So, I mean, I've seen, you know, seniors have been seeing this all of their lives, right? And so it feels different for us because we know that that's the expectation, that there is all, there's always been an us and a them. And painful to think that the place that you go to spend money, I mean, you're it's not like you're violating anybody's space. You're trying to, you know, push your culture or identity on anybody. We're sharing a space. We're sharing a grocery store. Mm-hmm. And somebody could assume that just because there's a higher density of people, you know, in terms of population that shop there that are people of color, this should be a good place where I could go and I could target people and I could mm-hmm. kill them. It brings back the memories of the traumas that you've had to go through before in your life experience. At the same time, recognizing safe spaces are so limited. Your safe space is your home. Mm-hmm. You close your door, you go into your home, and hopefully you're, you know, safe in your home. And that's tough, right? Because that's what a lot of our seniors did mm-hmm. and still are doing. Yeah. We have a lot of people that won't go back into the top store. You know, I've had a lot of people ask me, like, how do you feel about it? And I'm like, I can't decide one way or the other. Mm-hmm. That's not my job. My job as an advocate is to see what the people are asking for, and that's what I have to weigh into. Majority rules with me. And so people wanted the store to be reopened, and the store got reopened. You know, I go in there infrequently because it's painful, but also because they don't carry a lot of the things that I need to get. Mm-hmm. I have to travel to bigger top stores all the time just to get some of the things I actually do want to buy. Mm-hmm. And so it's a constant reminder of how people of color have always been understanding that they have to hold their own space. Mm-hmm. And there is only certain spaces for us, right, that are comfortable when we're amongst ourselves mostly. But still, I mean, violence is violence, and it's happening across the city all the time. It's just different when you're trying to navigate that you have a love for some white people. I was talking with someone about that this morning. When I went home yesterday, even into this morning, I have to reconcile within myself that I have good white alliances in my life. I have white people that I absolutely love, I would lay down for. And that is the thing that really helps me to navigate how I continue to move forward and level myself out in recognizing that, you know, it's not that there's all bad. It's not that there's all good. We have to recognize that we have people that we do have in our space who are there for us, have always been there for us. And that's the reason why we even got some things done in this country in terms of, you know, civil rights acts and things like that, because they've always been there for us. It's for me to have to accommodate that within myself and recognize that, you know, I have to deal with my own anger and my own trauma. I don't want to take it out and express it in a way that's going to damage somebody else, and it's not their fault.
Are you still angry?
Damn, I'm still angry. Mm-hmm. But I'm more angry because, again, I'm waiting for people to do the right thing. You know, stop asking us, what do we need? We've been telling you. Mm-hmm. We've been telling you all this time what we need, and it's falling on deaf ears. It doesn't matter. You don't care what we say. So, yes, I'm angry because at some point I would love for us to get into a situation in this city where community leadership can actually sit down with political leadership and church clergy who have done so much damage over the last 4 years, For once, can we just reconcile that there's been damage done on all sides and try to navigate how we're going to work towards fixing that? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, collateral damage is just going to keep happening. And yeah, we're going to keep being angry.
We're about to jump to a break, but that just reminded me of a conversation I had yesterday on Jefferson, and we were talking about these conversations. And I was like, until our elected officials, our clergy, these people can come into a space and abandon their title.
Yes.
And recognize that you are just as much a member of this community as I am. And having a title or a position doesn't separate you. You could have been in that store that day and no one would have said, oh, you're an elected official, so you're safe. You know, so until we can abandon these titles and really have these conversations, we're never even going to find ourselves on the same playing field.
Well, no, because there's always an agenda. There's always an agenda at the table. And until people can learn how to lay down their agendas just for a minute and just let us breathe and try to work together and collaborate something that can really help this city, inner city Buffalo, that's where we're going to be.
Yeah. This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media. We are going to jump to a quick break and we will be right back.
The headlines don't stop. The world keeps moving, and through it all, you need news and information you can trust. That's where we come in. WBFO is now Buffalo Toronto Public Media NPR. Same station, same trusted journalism, just with a new name. From Morning Edition to All Things Considered, from Group Chat to Friday Night Lights, from What's Next to the BBC, we bring you the stories and smart conversations that matter. No spin, no nonsense, just the perfect mix of news, information, and entertainment. Listen anytime on the BTPM Listen app or btpm.org.
Corey here with the Compact Civics Expansion Pack.
America is such a big, wide, awesome place, and to be able to see things that are representative of so many different places, it can be so important when brought to your tiny town.
Everybody is so kind and loving. I'm here in Buffalo just because of State Buffalo.
From urban farms to rural fairs, we'll celebrate spaces that bring us together and create community.
Watch on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
Facts, context, conversation. Your trusted local news source has a new name, but our mission remains the same. BTPM NPR. Explore more at btpm.org or download the BTPM Listen app.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM Listen app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
And we're back with What's Next. We are joined by Miss Denise Barr, Saria Walker, and Freebirth Omoigui. My name is Akua Menzedu.
I'm Jillian Hainsworth.
And so we're going to jump right back into the conversation. And so before we took a break, we started to talk about spaces where you feel safe, you know, and spaces where you could really see yourself and have a place where you could call community as well. Right. And so I'm wondering, you know, there's a conversation around third spaces, and especially for youth, those are happening a lot lesser, I think, in our community, where you don't always have a place to go, right? Or a place to, you know, connect with friends in that way. And so I'm wondering if both of you can talk a little bit about your experiences. Where do you go? Where do you feel safe? And where do you have spaces of community with your peers?
So after 514, I remember there was events at Johnny B. Wiley, right by Tops. I remember me and Freebirth actually just going to Johnny B. Wiley's together. And even though, you know, the situation just happened, that was still kind of our safe space. Like we were, you know, there's a basketball court over there. There's like a little playground. We were with our other friend, and we honestly just went over there and still hung out and, you know, had a good time. there was like food trucks right across from Tops. We went over there, got food. So as much as the community was negatively impacted, like that's still our community at the end of the day. It still a place that we still go with our friends and hang out, which is why I feel like it is so important to make sure these spaces are safe, because there is a lot of youth that still find comfort in these spaces because that's where they grew up. That's where we go. Even people like for me, like I live on the west side, I'm the east side all the time, like all of the time, because I have a lot of friends that live on the east side, so I'm going to be around there a lot. So like, as much as, you know, there is violence and conflict in the community, like, we still find comfort in that at the end of the day, because, again, it's where we grew up, it's where our family is, it's where our friends are. So that's really, and, you know, like, we still go to, you know, there's downtown and there's other places like that where we hang out. But, you know, if you were an outsider, you would, I feel like you would be shocked, like, oh, like, you know, a shooting just happened and your next day you're hanging out with your friends. Yeah, we live there. Where else would we go? You know what I'm saying? So.
I think this isn't in terms of like what happened on 514, but honestly, everything is connected. But like it is so hard, like as a youth or a teenager, to find spaces or safe spaces to go into, because adults are like always policing you, especially as like a young black teenager. It's very hard because you're always being policed by adults, especially like once you get out of school, and that's what you guys specifically asked about. After school, there are like so many places that you could go, right? But once you get inside that place, it's, oh no, you can't stay in here because you're a student. Oh no, you have to buy something first because you're a student. Oh no, actually you can't, just like, no, like this isn't like, you cannot be in here after a specific time or whatever. And I just feel like the policing is so, it's just overdone. Like, especially because, like, I understand sometimes why the policing happens, because, like, there's always something that happens, or, like, there's, like, a track record for kids, you know, who come into spaces and, you know, do certain things. But it's, like, there can always be preventative measures, and like things can be prevented before we have to get into that policing stage where no, you just can't come in. It's like, if you're a kid and you can't go home straight after school, then what are you gonna do? Where are you gonna be? And that's why we have so many kids who just end up being at the train stations hanging out all day. You know what I mean? Because you literally can't go inside anywhere else. And then what if you go inside a corner store to hang out for an hour? Like, you can't do that. They're right. gonna tell you to get out. You're stealing, you're doing whatever. So then we just have kids just being outside, like literally outside. That's the space, and it's not very safe. There's not like being outside is not safe. To me, like, it's just not safe. Being at the train station is not safe. Like, but I will say, like, there are like peacemakers and stuff. It really depends, but like, you know, there are certain adults that are in spaces that make you feel safe. Like, especially, like, I know at Performing Arts, my school, we have a student counselor. I believe she's the student counselor, Miss Jones, but she, like, she's always doing some type of like something just to make everyone feel included and to make everybody feel safe. If you need something, you can go there and you can talk to her. But like I said, everything is just so situational that like, because if you don't go to my school, then who do you have? You know what I mean? If you go to another school, if you go to Hutch Tech or if you go to Emerson, like, not everybody has a person in their school to go and talk to. Like, and then even if you do, I know so many kids at Hutch Tech who are like, oh, I don't even know who my guidance counselor is. And it's like, what? But that's because they have all of these kids over there and not enough people to like help guide the students. Like, and I understand Performing Arts is a smaller school. So, you know, we have, we're a smaller school and we have like 5 administrators and 3 people that you can go to talk to if you need anything. And even sometimes that's not enough. So I can't imagine what it's like for bigger schools who only have like 1 counselor or something. And then they can't even go and see them because they're always booked up. There's always something to do. So I think that there's just limited spaces for teenagers and black teenagers to be in general, because like in Buffalo, like, I feel like so many of our schools are predominantly black, and that's the that's like, we're all being affected, but since we are predominantly Black, it's so many Black people that are being affected too. And like, some of these rules were put in place because we're Black, you know what I mean? So that's just, that's how I feel about that. I just don't feel like there's enough safe spaces because, yeah.
So we lack safe spaces for youth. And what about for our elders? Like, when we even look at our elders who are of retirement age, right? And I know you said for a lot of our elders, they have kind of gone in their house and they don't want to come back out because of what's actually happening outside, those things that we don't always talk about as a whole community here in Buffalo. But if they did want to go somewhere and socialize and interact. I have an aunt who is an elder, and Tops was her spot. Like, when she goes to Tops, she's going to run into her friends. She's going to talk to the pharmacist. She's going to, you know, she's just, those are her friends. Those are her people. That's where she hangs out. That's gone now.
Yes.
So where do elders go to find safety and community?
We really don't. I mean, in my community, we had a space that was available specifically for the seniors. They would go and have a lunch. They had programs all the time. It was closed off to us long before the incident happened with Tops. And so we really don't. Obviously, the trend has always been that, you know, you push the old folks back because they take up too much space and they have too many needs. And so, you know, we need to let the young folks thrive. And that's always been happening, you know. Again, not recognizing the needs of the community in terms of, you know, having the elder come forward and to speak, to bring the healing. The traditions of our people, I've even talked recently many times with our people after funerals. People have lost the tradition of the breaking of the seal. A lot of people, young folks, don't even know what that is. When we gather after somebody has died, the tradition of the breaking of the seal was that you bring a bottle of whatever, and we gather together to pay tribute and to give honor, and we break the seal, and we all have a beverage, and we all salute and toast the memory of. We have long forgotten our own traditions and values. And so things just as simple as that, right? It's never been about getting drunk. It's never been about all of the things that people do now. It was always a tradition of, we pay tribute and honor to someone in their memory. And that's why we break the seal. And I've often said, you know, my sons know after God takes me home, there'll be a lot of broken seals, but in between now and then. You know, I think it's so important to try to know that the seniors add value because we have information that has been erased, has been forgotten, and you don't know what you don't know. If our youth is to carry on withholding the values and traditions of the seniors, then there has to be a meeting place where we come together and we share. Again, there has to be a table. There has to be a space where we can do that together. We can learn each other because that's the biggest problem, right? Is the agitation of the seniors and the jubilation of the youth. And when they come together, they kind of clash for a minute.
Everybody gets on everybody's nerves.
Yeah, but you know, that's the best family reunion in the world,
right?
Because we at some point have to learn how we're going to come to the table and eat the food and sit down together.
Right.
Everybody's got a drunk uncle in their family. We know he's there. We don't want to have to bother with him, but we got to sit him in a corner somewhere and let him do what he does, right? These are the traditions and values. And unfortunately, we've really separated ourselves and we lost some of that.
Yeah. Before we jump to our next break, after May 14th, a lot of people, especially people from outside of that community, from outside of 14208 or even the east side of Buffalo, started saying like Buffalo strong. There was this hashtag like we are strong. And I personally really took exception because I have a line in a poem where I say, don't let them glamorize your resilience while keeping you stuck in survival. So it's like they're cheering on this strength that should not have to exist.
Exactly.
How do you feel about the idea that we are one buffalo and we're strong and we get through things together?
Honestly,
is that true?
I don't think it's true. When the hashtag was going on, I was honestly very irritated. Like, I was just like, this isn't, like, no. Like, it wasn't giving to me. Like, it really wasn't. I was very confused also because, like, I don't know. People always try to make this, like, thing that, like, Black people just have to be so strong all the time. And, you know, because we're so resilient and everything that we've been through and we've pushed through it all. And, you know, but I think it's also very harmful because it's like, dang, what if we aren't strong? Like, you know, like what if we are not strong? And I think that it's okay to not be strong because, like you, once you get knocked down so many times, like, I don't know, like, you can't just pick yourself back up in a matter of seconds all the time. Like, you can barely do it most of the time. Like, you do need time to, like, be able to rebuild yourself and rebuild your mindset and your thoughts and just gather yourself. So just pushing the narrative that, like, we're so strong, it, like, I just feel like it's very harmful because it's like, no, like, we aren't, though. And Buffalo doesn't get through everything as, like, Buffalo is so divided and so segregated. So it's like, how can we get through things as one big Buffalo if, like, we don't get through any other situation as one big Buffalo?
I think it's so easy to glamorize someone else's struggles when you're not going through that struggle yourself. Mm-hmm. Not to say that, you know, everybody that was, you know, reposting that hasn't struggled, you know, in Buffalo, but honestly, like, you know what, like Freebirth said, it's hard to be strong 24/7. Like, at some point you get tired, you get exhausted, and Buffalo is not always one. Like we've talked about, it's very divided, and we keep using divided, we keep using these words segregated because I feel like it's so prominent, it's so, like, relevant. Like, honestly, it was so easy for that man to target, you know, Tops, because it's so divided, so segregated. So you're saying Buffalo's strong, but that's not all of Buffalo, if that makes sense. Other parts of the city have to be stronger than others. So I think to say that is a little bit, you know, unfair, because depending on the part of the city that you live in, you have to be more strong. You have to do more things than somebody else would have to, living on the west side compared to the east side. So,
Thank you for that. We're going to jump to one more break, and then we will be right back with Miss Denise Barr, Saria Walker, and Freebirth Omoigui. This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media.
Buffalo Toronto Public Media produced a short documentary on creative restorations, which delivers life-saving supplies to combat overdose in Western New York.
Because we're a new agency, what happens sometimes is, you know, a lot of grant funders, they are hesitant to fund you. So we were on the fence with getting the grant before I sent them the video. It was able to show the grant funder what exactly their money was going to go towards. With that grant, that allowed us to secure a home base. Now we have a location where we do community meals, where we provide services right then and there. So I think the importance is you guys were able to really put boots on the ground with us, really show the city in a lens that you don't commonly see. So I think it helps to raise awareness to some of the issues that we have in our city. But also, what else left do we have to do as a community to better our community? Please, if you can, fund public media. Make sure that they're available because they really put a harder focus on the community. And it really gives a better view of what we really need to get done here.
Contact Congress now at protectmypublicmedia.org.
Hear Here, live music in Buffalo, New York, is your guide through the melodic pulse of the city. Get a VIP behind-the-scenes look at the broad collective of vibrant festivals, historic venues, and mind-blowing artists that take the main stage and make Buffalo, New York, the music destination it is. Listen to Hear Here, hosted by Bentley on Thursdays at 11:30 a.m. and Saturdays at 6:30 p.m. on 88.7 BTPM NPR.
From the fringes of the mainstream to the local music you love, listen to Buffalo Toronto Public Media at the Bridge Monday through Thursday, 8 p.m. to midnight on BTPM NPR at 88.7 or from your smart speaker.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM Listen app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
And we're back with What's Next. My name is Ekua Menzedu, and I'm joined by
Jillian Hainsworth.
And we're also joined by Miss Denise Barr, Saria Walker, and Freebirth Amoigui. And so before we took a break, we started to talk about, you know, some of the feelings around when folks are talking about Buffalo Strong and, you know, connecting back to themselves in that way. One of the things that we've started to talk about is, you know, what's next, not the show, obviously. But, you know, how do we move towards joy? How do we take back, you know, this story, and how do we make sure that we're centering community as well? And so oftentimes we talk about joy as an act of resistance and what that looks like. And I'm wondering, you know, what that would look like for each of you as well.
I would lean in and say that I've been talking about that a lot lately. As much as things are so hard right now for all of us, it's not just people of color, but all of us, right? It's this knot that's tightening consistently every day behind the things that are happening with the government. And yet, if we pay attention, we see little flickers of stuff happening where we're eating that elephant a bite at a time. We are winning. We're not seeing it right away, but there's little glimmers of it happening all across the country. And if you really look hard, you see that we really are eating that elephant a bite at a time. In between all of that, babies are still coming. Weddings are still coming. Spring is still happening. I gotta, like, in real time, find some time this weekend to, I'm a grower, so I gotta get my stuff in the ground and watch my babies come to fruition with my planting. And so there is stuff still to be joyful. There are moments where we still get a mental health break and we can still be joyful for a little bit. And we can really have hope to know that this is not the end, right? I was telling somebody recently, you know, several years ago, I was in a Wegmans. I was coming back from Poor People's Campaign, and we stopped to have food. And I ate some food, some Asian food, and I had a piece of chicken that lodged in my throat. And somebody was freaking out because he saw me, and he didn't know what am I going to do? And so I was like, I am not dying in Wegmans. This is not the end of my story, right? And so I got to get up and I got to walk around and I got to figure it out. And so I say all of that because, you know, there is little glimmers that we have to hang on to. There are small joys in our life that are going to help us to be able, from day to day, to be able to survive and thrive still.
My big piece is, I think if we stopped letting ourselves divide each other and outsiders divide each other, we would be so much happier. I think we are always in conflict with each other or letting others bring conflict to us that we forget that there's so much positivity in Buffalo. There's such a big community in Buffalo. When it actually comes down to it, we do all come together and we help each other. And there's so many good things that we have done in the city that bring all of us joy, right? No matter what part of the city that you're in. So as much as there is, you know, negativity and conflict, there is so much joy and love and hope in the city. And I think if we honestly uplifted that more and talked to each other more, young folks, old folks, like, we would find more common ground than, you know, than we think. Because at the end of the day, if you grew up in Buffalo, you definitely grew up, you know, with some of the same struggles, you know what I'm saying? So I think it's very important to talk to each other and, you know, to just be more mindful of what we say and, you know, just be more mindful of what others' needs are as much as, you know, ourselves, because we can all help each other if we come together. I really, truly believe that.
I think they're both very right, like, especially with the uplifting, like, joy more and, like, bringing, like us just coming together as a community because we are so divided. And, like, that's why I think like community health workers is really important too. Just because like from day one, like when you step, like when I stepped into the space, it was a place that like, you know, young people and like people who were older than us were, we were all just talking as one, and we were all getting, you know, the same training, and we just all were just having like those intergenerational conversations, and even stuff that like we do now, like personally, I haven't like been part of the tutoring that's going on, but just like helping like the little kids that like go to school and stuff like that, you know, would bring me so much joy, because it's like wow, like this used to be me, like I used to be in this space, and just like just knowing that, you know, they have people, you know, like us who look like them, and you know, who were once in their place, like it definitely, like, I don't know, it just makes me feel like, you know, maybe we will be okay, because there are people who, you know, want to bring the community together and want to help everyone out. And yeah, that's my whole thing.
And I should mention there's still silent disco. For us old heads, man, I love silent disco. It is just too much fun. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there is some joy.
Yeah, Friday nights on Jefferson. Right. Can't wait for that. I can't wait.
Shout out to my nana.
I can't, but yeah, silent disco, I'm good to go.
So as one of the top podcasts in Western New York, we have a lot of listeners, and everybody who listens to this show may not even live in Buffalo, they may not be from the East Side, but they may be saying like, what can I do to help and support the changes that are being demanded and being created and being built?
Right.
So my question for all of you, and this will be my final question, what is the role of people who are not from our community and maybe not directly affected by May 14th? What role can they play when it comes to creating and demanding the changes that we deserve here in Buffalo?
For me, because we all understand what's happening with this government in terms of cuts. You know, the organizations that are really have been doing the work, the boots on the ground, community health workers and others, right? They need support. They need financial, like right now, they need financial support. I would say do your homework and look at the organizations in the city that are working with inner city, with youth and others, and support if you're able to do that, because they don't have funding. Mm. You know, I'm struggling to figure out, even with our children in public schools, we know the budgets have been cut for lunch. How are we not going to feed our children? If the city won't allow us to grow what we need to grow, what are we supposed to do? But we have to figure it out. So I think that there has to be real intention in looking to find out, you know, where can you invest that's really going to help our communities right now?
I would say do your research. Not everything you see that pops up real quickly is true. Mm-hmm. Taking the time to really do your own research and see what you can do to help would make a big difference. Obviously, Ms. Barr said, you know, there is a lot going on financially. So if you obviously, you know, have the funds and you want to donate, you can do that. But even that, just speaking up for what you believe in and what you know is right goes so far, because if one person is doing it, then another person may see you doing it, and then you have 10 people when it was just one. Like, we really are, again, could be a very strong community when we all come together. So honestly, just I think advocating for what you believe in is right makes a huge difference.
I think they're both very right. We do need money. And also, yeah, like just like personally, like on a personal level, communicating with people who aren't like from the community, like just listening, you know, like you don't always have to have something to say. Sometimes you just need to listen to what a person is going through, take that in, and just, yeah, like it can just be that. I think also like doing your research, just to like, you can't really understand what someone is going through necessarily, but you can try your best to, and that will definitely impact the way that you are like communicating with people. Because if you read up on something and you have the knowledge on that, you're not just gonna, you know, come off as ignorant because you already, you know some of the things that are happening in that person's lives and that in that person's community. So yeah, doing your research, listening, and funding.
Help with the funds.
A little money never
hurts.
Right.
Never hurts.
Some dollars. Especially now. I just want to have funds.
Right. For sure. Especially now.
Thank you so much. And if you're listening, I hope you really take heed to what they're saying. Do your research. Find out how you can support, whether it's listening, whether it's having these necessary conversations at your own dining room table or in your own networks, or donating to these organizations like Community Health Worker Network of Buffalo, who are showing you that they are on the ground doing the work. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Space.
Love to have you again. I'm Jillian Hainsworth.
And I'm Akua Menzedu.
And this is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Thank you.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.